The Holy Gospel according to Mark, the 9th chapter. Glory to you, O Lord. They went from there and passed through Galilee, and Jesus did not want anyone to know it, for he was teaching his disciples, saying to them, "The Son of Man is to be betrayed into human hands, and they will kill him. And 3 days after being killed, he will rise again." But they did not understand what he was saying and were afraid to ask him. Then they came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he asks them, "What were you arguing about on the way?" But they were silent, for on the way they had argued with one another who was the greatest. He sat down and called the 12 and said to them, "Whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all." Then he took a little child and put it among them, took it in his arms, and he said to them, "Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me. And whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you,
O Christ. I invite you to be seated. Just as there are two reigns, the reign of heaven and the reign of the world, the author of James says there are two kinds of wisdom. Wisdom from below and wisdom from above. The wisdom of the reign of the world and the wisdom of the reign of God. The wisdom from below is characterized by bitter envy and selfish ambition, filled with boasting and falseness. And James says this wisdom, this way of living and behaving, is from the earth, is unspiritual. Literally, it means from the physical life alone, and, not to put too fine a point on it, demon-like. When these things guide us, there is disorder. Things are unstable, and it brings forth wickedness, literally worthless things of every kind. The wisdom of the reign of the world brings disorder and chaos. The wisdom from above, James says, is pure. We were having conversation about this on Tuesday, and so I asked my colleagues, "Well, okay, what does he mean by pure?" And one of my colleagues had done the work that I already should have done. And she pointed me back to chapter 1 and how the author of James had defined it. Pure there is not the purity of the ritual purity of approaching the temple, but it was purity in the same way that Jesus defines it in Mark 7, where he says, it's not the things going in from the outside that defile us, it's the things that come from inside us and go out that are defiled. And so for James, a sign of purity, purity is what we do, and a sign of purity is where we do things like looking after widows and orphans in their distress. So purity for James is other-centered. And this is part of the reign of heaven, the wisdom of heaven. The wisdom of the reign of heaven is pure. It is also peaceable. Remember here, it is not just the absence of conflict, but it is wholeness. It is gentle in the sense of equitable fairness. It is willing to yield, to compromise. It is filled to the brim with mercy, compassion, even when we could hold someone to account. And it is filled to the brim with good fruits. And while the author of James may not have known Paul's letters, what that brings to mind is Paul's description of the fruits of the Spirit. It is filled to the brim with the good fruits of love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. The wisdom from above is all of these things without a hint of partiality or hypocrisy. This is the wisdom that Jesus embodies, that Jesus lives, and that Jesus calls us to follow him in. James then points to the reality that surrounds his readers. He says, where do these conflicts, these wars, and these disputes, these fights among yourselves, where do they come from? Well, they come from your own hedonism, your cravings for pleasure that cause conflict not only externally with others, but internally in yourself. You want something and you can't have it. And so, like David with Bathsheba, you commit murder for it. You covet something that doesn't belong to you, cannot get it, so you go to war over it, like Russia and Ukraine. This is the wisdom of the world, and it leads to disorder. You want to return to order, stability? You want the wisdom from above, then. And to get that, James says, have humility before God. Place yourself under God's reign. Literally, in a sense, know your place in the order of the world. You are not top dog. And part of how we do this is we stop following the devil. Literally, the language basically just says, stand still. Just don't keep going that direction. Say no. And the devil, who is a coward, will flee. Draw near to God, James says. And you'll find God is already there. Just like the reign of God that has come close and Jesus is so near, you can feel its breath on your cheek. The minute you turn to follow God, whoa, there he is. He's already there. As one author put it, those who acknowledge their dependence on God will receive the grace to overcome the passions that distort human life. A colleague of mine used the image of the prodigal father for this. Remember him? On seeing his son coming back from a distance, he sees him and he runs to greet him. Kill the fatted calf, let us rejoice. This is how God reacts to us every time we turn, always and always. We were talking about this in our worship on Wednesday, and somebody who was there kind of despaired because they said, well, everything I do is because of selfish ambition. I said, well, tell me more about this. And they said, well, and this is not the exact example they used, but all right, I go to school to be a plumber because, well, you can earn some good money there. And that'll lead to a good life for me. And that'll lead to what, right? And so their conclusion is, well, everything I do is selfish. Well, yes, but no. Is this really what James is getting at? I don't think so. This echoes part of what I've been saying unto you all for months now. When we share the places that we have used our gifts during the week, or we've seen others use them, every one of you has gifts that God has given you. Gifts like working with your hands or your head. Gifts of administration and organizing. Gifts of hospitality, welcoming folks in. Of listening, of healing. And to not acknowledge these gifts and that they are from God is to claim them as your own. That's selfish. Author Joan Chittister puts it this way: humility is the admission of God's gifts to me and the acknowledgement that I have been given them for the sake of others. And so while I may be compensated well for my skills as a plumber, my goal is to use them for the betterment of the life of others. Everybody needs a flushing toilet and hot water. And this gets at the Lutheran understanding of vocation, calling. In his work, Freedom of the Christian, Luther writes that followers of Jesus need none of these things, good works. We don't need good works for our righteousness and salvation. Therefore, Luther says, you should be guided in all your works by this thought and contemplating this one thing alone, that you may serve and benefit others in all that you do, considering nothing except the need and advantage of your neighbor. Luther believed that any work conducted in faith with humility, this right understanding of where these gifts have come from and what they're for, he said, any work you do is an opportunity to reflect the love of God and love of neighbor. A mother who happens to be a homemaker provides food, clothing, and a well-ordered house for her closest neighbors, who happen to be her children and her husband. A plumber provides quality work for her customers and a reasonable living for those that she might employ. The farmer supplies healthy food for a greater good of the community. God's desire is for us to be fed, housed, and clothed, right? And God will not begrudge us a living. What keeps us humble is that pull into relationship with others. I use the gifts that God has given me to be the best burger flipper, grocery bagger, cashier, accountant, truck driver, carpenter, student, etc., 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 that I can be, so that my work benefits my neighbor. And if I receive a good living because of that, great. But all I need is my daily bread, and God has promised you will get that. Now, our reading in Mark gets at this tension between the wisdom of the world and the wisdom of the reign of God. Jesus asked the disciples, "What were you talking about on the way?" And again, I agree with one of the commentators that I read most often that a better way to translate their response, it reads, they've been arguing about which one of them is the greatest. But you can also translate it that they've been arguing about the nature of greatness. What makes somebody great? Now, Jesus knew what the wisdom of the world would say. It's probably something that the wisdom of the world says now and might be the first things to pop into our minds. Greatness comes from things like having and exercising power, of effecting great change through the power of money, political power, the power that comes through violence used and threatened. The goats dominate everyone, right? Michael Jordan, Tom Brady, Caitlin Clark. The disciples are still stuck in the definition of Messiah from last week. Remember that? This muscular, dominating, triumphant figure. Jesus then defines what the wisdom of the reign of God says about greatness. Aspire not to be first, Jesus says, but last of all, and to serve all. Extend hospitality, food, welcome to those who have no apparent worth in society, who literally aren't considered worth spending the money on, and who don't deserve it because XYZ. You can probably fill in. And interestingly enough, Jesus says, you will find that in drawing near to those folks, that you have drawn near to Jesus. This is Matthew 25 stuff. As you have done it for the least of these, so you have done it for me. And when you do these things, you will receive an abundant harvest of right relationships with your neighbors and with God. And this, Jesus says, this is what lasts. This is life. And what will it profit you if you have $2 billion, but you get to the end of it all and find that that's all you have? That in doing so, you have lost that most precious gift of life. Indeed, what can you give for your life? Can you buy it with money or with power? Or with violence? No. Your life has been bought with the love of God and Jesus Christ. A love that found victory in the cross. That's the wisdom of God, even though it looks like foolishness to the world. As followers of Jesus who happen to be Lutheran, we know that these two wisdoms are always at war in us, don't we? That like the disciples of Mark, one minute we are selflessly out using our gifts for the good of our neighbor, and the next we are dismissing the person over there because of how they look or act or where they're from. But we have the waters of baptism into which we can dip every day. Waters that remind us of the truth of who we are. Beloved children of God, gifted by God with unique talents and abilities for the sake of the world. A reminder that we live in the reign of God, and that we have been given in Jesus and through baptism the wisdom of God. A wisdom that moves us to be other-centered, that produces peace within you and others, that leads us to be equitable and fair, that gives us a willingness to hear others and compromise with them, that fills us to the brim with mercy and good fruits of the Spirit. A wisdom that brings an end to the disorder around us and within us. We have a God who always welcomes us with open arms when we return to God after squandering our inheritance again and going off in pursuit of money and power and fame, who always kills the fatted calf and says, "My beloved child, welcome home, welcome home." Let us celebrate. Friends, in this time, in this place, and on this day, and in this meal, God says, welcome home. Let's celebrate. Thanks be to God.